What's up, meat?
Vaughn into the windup in his first offering. Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed. Ball four. Ball eight. Low, and Vaughn has walked the bases loaded on 12 straight pitches.
Live from the CG Technology Studio.
And there's a drive in the left field. This is hit well.
Capital of the world.
The Brewers take the lead.
It's the T.C. Martin Show.
A game that absolutely defies description. Steve Garvey in the ninth inning hit one over the 370 mark, and the Padres beat the Cubs 7-5. Oh, doctor, you can hang a star on that, baby.
It's time to get your daily prescription from the doctor.
Swings, and there it is. A base hit in the right center.
Morgan,
a smash up the middle, base hit to center. Here comes Gomez around third. A throw and the Brewers win. Wow, what a scene.
The doctor is now in.
Oh, doctor.
Glad to have you with us on a thunderous Thursday edition of the T.C. Martin Show, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Glad to have you with us. NBA draft an hour away from the very first pick. Looking forward to that. And we will be joined by Lon Kruger, the Oklahoma coach, and of course, the former UNLV coach. And he's got a player that could go top five, top six, maybe top 10, Trae Young. We'll talk to Lon about that. Mark Anderson will join us from the UNLV perspective. Will Brandon McCoy get drafted? So funny about that, because just about 6 months ago, people were saying top 10, top 20, well, first rounder. And now the conversation is, will he be drafted? So we'll talk to Mark Anderson about that. A lot to do, a lot to talk about with you today. And joining me live in studio here for this first segment, Brian Salmon, that's right, from the RJ, the former anchor here at Channel 13 in Las Vegas. He handles all the multimedia stuff there at the RJ, sports anchor extraordinaire. What's going on,
my man, Sam? TC? Thanks for having me in studio, man. I feel blessed to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you here, man.
Yeah,
much better than the phone, right?
You don't have any
screaming children with us.
I'm not running around with kids yelling and screaming in the background. No, this is all good. I got Chapman in front of me, this guy who looks much different than last night. This guy was sharp as a tack.
Well,
we all do.
We look much different today.
Yeah, well,
three of us were dressed to impress.
Got to give a big shout out to Friar Tux, too.
There's no doubt.
Awesome tuxes there.
Look at you, man. Give a shout out. They must have gave that to you for free.
No, but good stuff over there at Friar Tux.
Well, we have to give them a shout out, Friar Tux, and then also Tuxedo Junction. My man Mondo over there at both places. They're the same company, actually.
Okay.
And they took good care of us over here.
Right.
And last night, of course, the staff was dressed to impress. And it was a great time being on the red carpet, doing the interviews and everything last night. It was good seeing you there, and just what a night it was. When we talk about the NHL awards, the inaugural season for the Vegas Golden Knights, what a season, what a regular season, what a postseason, getting to the Stanley Cup final, and then it all culminates last night, up for four awards, four Golden Knights, personnel, and they sweep the board.
That's what I'm talking about. Remind you of Moses Malone? Man, I don't know. Yeah.
Let's talk about that. All right, so let's talk about the awards last night.
Right.
Let's start with William Karlsson,
Big Willie style.
Yeah. So the Lady Bing Trophy, and it's so much. It's funny about that because no one could really picture him being up for this award, but it's like, hey, he should probably be the Selkie or somewhere else.
He should have been, honestly.
There's no question.
Yeah, he should have been.
You know, but I don't think they knew how to handle a guy who goes from six goals to 43 goals. We got to give this guy some award.
He has to earn something.
And be honest with me, but before last night or even this year, did you know what the Lady Bing Trophy actually stood for?
Of course I did. I thought Lady Bing, she was the wife of David Bing that played basketball for, right? No?
I think he was Dave Bing,
Bing with the Detroit Pistons back then.
David?
Not Dan, David. What? I don't think he went by
the,
David.
And the Baltimore Bullets back in the day.
Yeah, I thought that not her.
No relation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, no, I guess
spelled a little bit differently
yeah, yeah.
too.
Yeah, is it? Yeah. Dave
was B-I-N-G.
Dave Lady Bing.
Oh God. Yeah. So
the notorious B-I-N-G. Is that where we're going
there
with
you
this?
Go.
The most gentlemanly player goes to William Karlsson.
Okay, if you say so. I mean, like you said, I really think they had to find an award to give to him. They gave him an award. The fact that he scored 43 goals, he should have been up for something much bigger than that. His team went to the Stanley Cup Finals, so if you're going with production and you're going with your team winning, you should have been up for something else, but I'm glad that he won that award. And your boy, Big Willie style, I like to call him Big Willie style, even though Wild Bill, whatever. But he was sharp, too. How about the outfit he had on last
night? They were
all
sharp last night, no doubt.
Those hockey players know how to dress. I can't front. They know how to dress.
Yeah. So then we go to Derek Engelin.
Yeah.
And I think we all probably thought that he would be the front runner for this award, the Mark Messier NHL Leadership Award.
Yeah.
And I think obviously the way he handled everything with the 1 October shooting and all that, being kind of the face there and being the local Las Vegas guy, great story. So congratulations to Derek Engelin, huh?
Yeah, he was very accepting of the award. He liked Mark Messier as a kid. I heard him talking about that, the fact that, you know, being in North BC and back when Messier was doing his thing. So he accepted the award very graciously, and he really should have been that award recipient with all that he's done in Las Vegas, being living here, playing for the Wranglers way back in the day and everything else. So that was very fitting.
And then the two awards that we figured were heavy favorites was Gerard Gallant and George McPhee.
Yeah.
The Jack Adams Coach of the Year Award goes to Gerard Gallant. It was great to see him get that. We got a chance to talk with him yesterday. He came on during our program yesterday in the red carpet, and he was just, again, just as even-keeled as we've seen all the time. This guy is just steady as can be, isn't he?
Yeah.
And so I'm very happy for him.
Yeah. Was he saying everyone is day-to-day?
Yeah, right.
Gerard Gallant, Gerard Gallant winning that award, no-brainer. If they gave it to anyone else other than Gerard Gallant, they should get rid of the award.
Right.
They really should get rid of it.
And then with George McPhee being the GM of the year, I think there was a fraction of sentiment out there with some people, maybe a little East Coast bias, saying, well, you know, McPhee did a good job, but with the expansion team and the rules
Stop.
I know, I agree with you, but I'm saying that sentiment was out there with some people. But bottom line is, what he did a fantastic job, the way he orchestrated this. And how much of this basically goes to your memory, too, going way back, the way he constructed the Washington Capitals.
He should
have factors into
he
it.
He should have got two awards.
Yeah.
I mean, really, he should have got two awards. He constructs a team that wins the Stanley Cup. He constructs a team that almost wins the Stanley Cup or goes to the Stanley Cup Finals. And then someone had the nerve, the audacity to actually think that someone else should have won that award. If anyone else won that award, get rid of that one too.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that would have been ridiculous.
All right. Brian Salmon joins us from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. You were on the red carpet. You were filming all kinds of stuff last night and stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, Magnum. So both of you guys, give me your take as the guys were walking through the red carpet, because I was in that stationary position there.
Give me
your take on last night's event.
Well, one, just like I said a moment ago, hockey players in the way that they dress, I mean, they take it serious. You know, basketball players, they think that they're looking sharp, and LeBron with the suit shorts and the...
Oh, that was awful.
How about the purse?
Yeah, the man purse, yeah. And then you got Russell Westbrook,
who
thinks he stepped out of Woodstock with some of the garbage he wears. But
So these hockey players, watching them come down the red carpet, they look sharp. I mean, they are, and I'm somewhat of a fashionista. I like to dress nice or whatever, TV background and all that. So I appreciated all of that. And then, how about this? I haven't posted the picture, but I got a picture of Alexander Ovechkin and the owner, Bill Foley, of the Vegas Golden Knights hugging each other.
Wow. There you go.
I was like, wow.
Yeah, that was, the Ovechkin situation, that was probably the only moment of the night where there actually were two. I wanted to talk to Willie O'Ree and his son, I think it was, who was with him, motioned to Willie to come over and talk to me twice. And I guess Willie must have gotten confused, or maybe he didn't see me and he kept walking. And then I wanted to talk to Ovechkin, and their PR guy with the Capitals twice, the guy made eye contact with me.
And he wouldn't bring him over.
Really? So I'm like, you know what, dude?
That's fine. Shout him out. What's his name?
I don't know what his name is.
But that's
some clown stuff right there.
That is clown stuff.
If you're going to make eye contact with me twice, at least say, you know what, I can't. We're on a tight schedule. Or
how about bring him over?
Well, the thing is,
let me get two questions.
He stopped and brought him over to the girl who was next to me, and all she asked him was, "What are you wearing?"
Yeah,
that's it. And he was like, "Oh, one question." And she's like, "What are you wearing?" I'm like, "Really?
Really?
That's important stuff."
And especially to him.
Well, yeah,
he's not like the fashionista type guy. You know what I mean?
I mean, look, some of the guys like Taylor Hall was well dressed. The Devils, you know, he had a nice tux on and. You know, I thought William Karlsson was well dressed, you know.
Derek England
looked good, you know, in that, you know, red suit that he was wearing. You know, it was weird though, because the red suit, I'm like, you know, but
shouldn't be going there. Suit
person. That's why I didn't get a red coat. Right. Plus, I would have thought I thought I would have looked like a valet Parker in the red tuxedo jacket.
I was about ready to give you my keys. No doubt, exactly.
Jingle jingle. Well,
I've done that to Willie Ramirez. I tried to give him my keys one night. When he wore the red jacket.
He didn't take too kind to that.
He almost kicked my ass.
Yeah. In a headlock.
Yeah. You guys talk about the dress, and I was talking to some of the guys last time, and I go, hey, you're in this, you know, very nice suit tux. I said, is probably the next time you wear a tux would be for your wedding. And a couple guys, you're probably right, because they don't get dressed up like that very often. And what cracks me up, I remember going back 2 years ago, there were several guys, you know, there in their tuxes, missing teeth. It just seemed weird. It just seemed different. You know, it's like, these guys don't get dressed up that much.
No.
And I thought it was funny, you know, the rookie of the year candidate, the 19-year-old kid from Arizona, he comes over and he goes, I'm only 19. He goes, I can't even be in these casinos. I can't go out. I can't drink.
True.
He goes, the only thing I'm doing is having dinner with my parents the two nights that I've been here. He goes, but I'm okay with that.
Sure, that's all you're doing. Yeah. But yeah, no, I get it, though. You can't be in the casino. You can't partake in the adult activities that we all partake in. But hockey players, they're not short of partying.
Yeah, Clayton Keller up for their Calder Memorial. So. Last night. So that was pretty good stuff. You know, I got a chance to talk with Phil Pritchard. He's the guy who is the keeper of the cup. And so you guys bring up Ovechkin, right?
Great hair on that guy. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
We're all follically challenged in this building. Yeah. They're in this room.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the three of us, I mean, that guy's got more hair than the three of us combined.
Exactly. How he does it, I have no idea. But anyway.
Must be the mystique of carrying around the Stanley Cup everywhere he goes.
So I was talking to him about Ovechkin.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, that whole thing got overblown by the media. He goes, Ovechkin had his day. He goes, but, you know, he went nuts with social media and all these stories. He goes, a lot of the stories that you heard, fabricated, not really true. He goes, it wasn't what it seems. So maybe that was one of the reasons too. They're, you know, they wanted to keep Ovechkin away from some of the reporters last night, because I don't know. It's nonsense.
Man, hockey players, if you win Lord Stanley's Cup, you should party. You should do whatever you want to with the cup. Everyone else is doing whatever they want to with the cup. And no one should begrudge or have anything negative to say about somebody partying with the Stanley Cup after playing in the league for so long. If you have negative comments or negative questions with Ovechkin and what he did with the cup, then you shouldn't be covering hockey. I mean, that's ridiculous. Like, come on.
I know.
Really,
I would celebrate? I would go absolutely crazy. If I was a player and I won, absolutely.
Yes.
You know, you work your entire life to get that. You know, I mean, the thing you learn about hockey when you cover it is just how many sacrifices these guys have to make. I mean, think about the league. Most of these guys, a lot of them are from Europe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so they're leaving their family. They're coming over here to chase the dream of playing professionally in the NHL. You know, the guys who are from Canada, they all play juniors. They ride that bus so they could all relate to the Humboldt situation. You know, and every player that I talked to was moved by that. You know, and you work basically from the time you're a small kid until you become a professional to win that thing. And if I was one of those guys and I had put in the dedication and the sacrifices and you win that trophy, you better believe I'm going absolutely. I would be drinking beers out of it. I would probably be doing vodka tonics out of it. I mean, I couldn't even think about what I would do with my day with the cup, because it would have to be something that nobody has ever done before.
That thing would have to be cleaned very thoroughly after I got done.
Oh, yeah,
with that cup.
Yeah.
Well, and talking to Pritchard about that, he said, oh, yeah, some of these stories, and think about it, no one talks about what took place like in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. And he goes, you know, that was before social media, long before all that. He goes, some of the stories that we heard from some of these old timers, pretty crazy stuff as well, too.
Of course. Yeah. Could you imagine? I mean, you know, the cup has been in many a bed. You know, the cup is very promiscuous.
Apparently, it's an alcoholic, too, from everything we're hearing, right?
Yeah, lots of demons from Lord Stanley's Cup.
So what was your biggest surprise? Were any surprises when the awards were unveiled last night at the Hard Rock, the actual ceremony itself?
You know what, honestly, I'm somewhat surprised that the Golden Knights went 4-for-4 in a little bit. And you know what other thing I was surprised about? One, Gerard Gallant, when he was giving his acceptance speech, when he forgot one of his grandchildren's names. I love that. Obviously, I mean, he knows his grandchild, but I thought that was pretty funny. But two, how they incorporated the Vegas Golden Knights into the actual ceremony. You know, they had the drum, what are they, drum bots? What do they call them?
Yeah, the drum bots, yeah. The drum line. Yeah,
they had the drum line inside there, like, going off. I thought that was a very nice touch. I mean, the fact that Las Vegas has hosted the NHL Awards for, 11 years, but this year, you can tell that they tried to put as much Vegas Golden Knights into it. Terry Fader's up there having the crowd screaming, "Go Knights, go," and everything else. I thought that was pretty cool how the fandom of the Golden Knights infiltrated the NHL Awards, and it still carried on.
Yeah, in the past when they've had like Penn and Teller and they've had other comedians come, they've always had that element of entertainment, a little comedy, then of course the seriousness. You had those issues obviously this year, so you had to incorporate all that. But I think the NHL did a fantastic job, you know, intertwining all that. But you're right, you know, going there the last few years in these awards, there wasn't a big connection with Vegas people really wanting to go. But this year, all of a sudden, it's a whole lot different. And of course, the way the season ended, too, going to the Stanley Cup, and then boom, you know, 2 weeks later, here we go. Now we get to host the awards, and now we're part of the awards. So I think that's why, you know, you had more Golden Knights fans that were there this year than they ever were in the past.
Yeah, I mean, walking around the Hard Rock Hotel, you see people with Golden Knights jerseys and you know, shirts, and women in there with their nice little shirts and hats and everything else. That's something that you wouldn't, I mean, obviously you haven't seen that in the years prior. I remember that was only my second NHL awards that I went to, and the last one I went to was the very first one.
Right.
Which is, and it was completely different from obviously the first one they had at the Palms way back in the day. So,
right.
Yeah. And you can see a connection to Las Vegas with the NHL Awards. And furthermore, the TV stations here in town, I was talking with like Chris Matthews at CBS. I was talking to Kevin Bollinger at Fox, and they were talking about how, like, in the past, they didn't care about putting anything from the NHL Awards on their newscast because no one cared about who won the Selke or, you know, all that stuff. This year, they cared about actually who won some of the awards because they had Golden Knights players up for it. So. Yeah,
great night, entertaining night as well. So now the NHL offseason officially begins. It's a very short offseason. And now here comes the business side of it as well, too. Now, I'm not sure a lot of fans are going to be ready for this because that roster will not look the same as next year's roster we're going to see. Well, I say next year, this year, because you know, coming up here in September, they're going to start training camp. You know, the first part of September, talking to Gerard Gallant yesterday, and he goes, you know, I know, you know, in all the exit interviews that we had with the team, it was like, okay, we're probably going to be some changes, but let's enjoy this year. He goes, he wants to have everybody come back, but he knows the reality of it all, that they're not going to come back, and that's going to be different, you know, for this fan base here.
It's going to be much different. And talking and going to the exit interviews and everything else, I saw Chap over there. And McPhee talked about the fact that, you know, the reality is that everyone on this team is not going to be back. The team's going to be different. I remember asking James Neal a question when he was sitting at his locker when he came out, the big lump on his lip. And I asked him, like, hey, you know, how long is it going to take you to kind of get over the loss of the Stanley Cup and then, you know, to really sit back and just appreciate what you did this year? And he started talking about that, but then he got really emotional. I mean, it really, like, he was about to start crying because he's like, you put so much into it. I thought we were going to win. I love being here. Like, I don't want to change. But you could almost see in his face that he knew that he was not going to be back here next year. And just, you know, he grew to love Las Vegas, and Las Vegas grew to love almost every player on that team. Yeah. So, like, if he's not back, Perron's not back, whatever. I mean, it's going to be.
And with Neil, he was one of those guys early on that really connected with the fans.
Yes.
I mean, the goal-scoring binge he went on the first month of the season.
Yeah.
Just fantastic.
First goal?
Exactly.
First two goals.
Exactly.
I mean, the game-winning goals or whatever.
So, what do you think? Do you think, as far as Neil, if Neil does not come back, it's purely a financial situation, or how does he fit in long term with this team?
Was he 31?
Mm-hmm.
I think that they're going to offer him a decent amount of money. He's going to get bigger offers.
This is his opportunity now to cash in, though, elsewhere.
It is. It is. But, I mean, you see him. He's already driving a nice white drop-top Ferrari.
Well, they're all doing pretty well.
He's doing okay. He's winning in all fronts. James Neal is the man with no teeth, the fake teeth now. But anyway, yeah, I think he's going to get offered money from somebody else, and I think he's going to really, really consider re-signing with the Golden Knights for less money. I give him a 45% chance of coming back.
See, 45%. I think it's greater. I think James Neal will be back.
Really?
Yes, I do.
Wow.
But here's the thing. Florida made a move, right? That's the spot that a lot of people were thinking he was going to go. They got Mike Hoffman from San Jose via Ottawa.
Okay.
Right? So they've already gone out and they've gotten a big-time player. Guy was a 50-point player. I think James Neal, he's probably not a first-line guy in Florida. Maybe he's a second-line guy.
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe?
Probably is. He's probably a second-line guy in Florida. Yeah. But he could be a second-line guy in Vegas, too, on a better team, a team that has a real chance to make some moves and go back. I think we saw in James Neal, he really, really wants to win.
Exactly.
We saw him really pick up the physicality in his game in the playoffs. And like you said, the way his facial expressions were after they lost, I think he took it really, really hard because now he's lost 2 years in a row.
Exactly.
And I think he knows Florida's not a team that's going to be built to win the Stanley Cup. Vegas is. Florida will be a playoff team, but I don't think they're good enough to get through Pittsburgh, Tampa, Philadelphia, New Jersey,
Boston.
Washington, Boston, Montreal, Toronto, not Montreal, but Toronto. To get there.
But you know, he's going to have some other opportunities from other teams who have some room to spend cap-wise. So we'll see. And this is his time to actually capitalize. And this is probably going to be his last contract.
It is.
Wherever he goes at that age. All right. Appreciate that. All right. As we come back, we'll talk to Lon Kruger as we've got NBA draft coming up. And we are less than about 45 minutes away from the first pick. Looking forward to that. Back with a little draft talk. And we come back. TC Martin Show on Fox. NBA draft. It is tonight. Always an exciting evening. NBA does it well. And join us now is someone that Vegas people are obviously very, very familiar with. He's heading into his eighth season at Oklahoma. He's been to the Final Four on two different occasions, four-time Conference Coach of the Year, including one with UNLV back in 2008. The former Rebel coach with us now, Lon Kruger. Lon, how you doing?
Doing great, TC. How you doing there today?
Excellent, my friend. Thanks for joining us. I know last time we talked to you, you had your great event here last month with the Coaches versus Cancer. I know that went very, very well. Always a success.
Thanks very much. And it did go well because of a lot of great partners, starting with Scott Sabella and MGM Grand there. Just unbelievable. And, Vegas construction folks, right on down the line. So many great partners. Just a terrific event. Coaches from around the country come in, raise a lot of dollars to fight cancer. So we need to stay after that nasty disease.
You got it. All right, let's talk a little bit about Trae Young. He spent 1 year with you in your program at Oklahoma. Lon, do you feel he is ready physically and mentally to make this jump into the NBA?
I think Trae will do great. Now, he'll be a lot better 2 years from now. But that's you can say that about any 19-year-old. With a body that's on the slight side a bit to start with. But no, Trae will do great. The open court, combined with his skill and his ability to stretch the floor and to deliver the ball and to score in a lot of different ways. But of course, he'll be a lot better 2 years from now, too.
You know, his game is being compared to Steph Curry. Do you see the similarities between those two guys, or are they actually different?
See the potential for comparison. Again, Steph is doing things at a point where he's, 8-9 years older than Trae. So right. Steph was 3 years in college and then a few years in the NBA before he really exploded onto the scene. And my concern is that people be patient and be fair with Trae because they want him to do what Steph's doing right now. And Steph didn't do that as a 19-year-old. And Trae won't do what Steph's doing his rookie year either. So, but he'll be fine. He'll do a great job, and hopefully, it works out where people have a good perspective and a fairness about it.
Yeah, I know you were coaching, obviously, that time when Steph was – actually, you were at UNLV when Steph was at Davidson. So I don't think your paths ever crossed or you never got a chance to coach against him. But I don't know how much you actually got to see him play when he was in college and if you could foresee the success that he's had in the NBA.
Absolutely. He was a terrific college player. And yet, again, he was doing that in college at – 2 or 3 years older than what Trey was doing what he did as a 19-year-old. So yeah, Trey loves Steph. He's done a good job of taking bits and pieces from a lot of different point guards in the NBA, and Steph is certainly one of those.
All right, we're talking with Lon Kruger about Trae Young, who will probably be selected probably within the top 10 tonight. That's what a lot of forecasts are thinking. We saw him have some tremendous games during the course of last season. He was obviously the talk of everyone the first couple months, but then he didn't seem to be as effective as the season went on, especially at the end. Is that a fair assessment, Lon, or not? And what are your thoughts on Trey's season from the beginning to the end?
Very accurate assessment, I believe. Of course, when you consider the start he got off to, was unlike anyone has ever done in the history of college basketball. So that first 12, 15 games set the bar so high. And then you get into conference play, and defenses get familiar. They get a little bit more physical. They get the ball out of his hands. They conference play is like that across the board, and certainly was for Trey. And then again, I think the social media, they started beating him up a little bit there. And again, he still did great. He just didn't do in the last half what he did in the first half. So, but he'll learn from it, and he'll grow from it, and hopefully make great strides going forward.
What are your thoughts about the whole one-and-done nature of college basketball that we see with the current landscape right now?
Hope they go ahead and rule that young people have a choice coming out of high school. I think absolutely that's the right thing to do. I also would like to see some consideration. Because young people coming out of high school, more than half of those will never play. They go out of high school will never play in the NBA, and they've also forfeited their amateurism by doing so. So I'd like to see something done to where these young people are going to get some bad counsel, some bad advice. Everyone wants them to play in the NBA, but it's not the wise thing to do, and yet they do it. So I'd like to see some opportunity for them to be able to say still have that 5-year window that would have in college. If they go out for a couple of years and realize they made a mistake, maybe still have 3 that they can put their name back in and be recruited to go back to college. Something that doesn't eliminate them from the possibility of a college degree.
How much input do guys like you, college coaches, have in this? Is this more of a conversation it's strictly with NCAA brass and athletic directors and league presidents? Or do they actually hear from the college coaches on the future and what should happen here?
Everyone has input, through committees, through, the NCAA, the Players Association, the NBA, the presidents, the athletic directors have all got their committees. Certainly there's input, but it's a decision that comes down at the highest level, for sure. The NBA Players Association has a lot to do with it. The NCAA presidents, ADs, they have a lot to do with it. They'll listen in some cases to the coaches and consider it, but still in the long run, those are decisions made at the very highest levels.
All right, Lon Kruger joined us currently at Oklahoma, doing a fantastic job with the Sooner program there, and of course, longtime UNLV coach between 2004 and 2011. What is your strategy in recruiting as far as going after superstars in high school and players knowing that you may only have one guy for maybe only 1 year if you decide to go after that guy and recruit him? Or do you sometimes bypass those big blue chippers, Lon, and say, hey, I'm looking more for guys that will be with me for 4 years? How do you approach that?
You approach it really in trying to identify people that, number one, fit your program. They want to be here. If they're here for just 1 year because they're that talented, but if they were here for the right reasons, then I think that works fine. In Trey's case, we, I guess, in a way, was fortunate because we knew in December the way he had blown up that he was going to be a one and done. And not always do you have that luxury. young guy, Zaire Smith, for instance, at Texas Tech, is a terrific player. And no one would have anticipated him being drafted at all to start the year. And then he plays so well late that all of a sudden he's potentially a lottery pick. So it's interesting to see how that can be so unique from one player to the other. But you always recruit guys that that you feel good about being in your program, and you want to be around every day, and they're going to be good teammates, and you're going to work hard to be great every day.
How do you handle that situation when a player comes up to you and says, "Coach, I'm thinking of leaving school. I'm thinking of going to the NBA." Is it a deep conversation where you're trying to say, "Hey, I think you need to stay in school," or do you 100% put the decision and the onus on the player, or is it a total case by case situation here?
It's case by case. Buddy Hield,
right,
3 years ago, was in a situation after his junior year, you know, where a lot of people wanted him to come out, and really in all cases, you know, our response when a young guy comes to us is, "Well, what role you want us to play in this?" And in Buddy's case, he said, "Coach, whatever you can get for me." And I said, "Well, I'll get you all the information, but I'll get it from the NBA people, the general managers, the owners, the presidents. So you've got credible information, because you know you can throw out, anyone can throw out an opinion." And I just advised Buddy, just listen to people that know what's going on and make your own decision. And Buddy did that, and in that case, he was projected to be, maybe an early second after his junior year, and he basically on his own said, against a lot of people's advice, said, "Coach, I can do better." And he came back and had player of the year type year and became the sixth pick in the draft. So that, it's a case by case situation.
You know, with Trae Young and Buddy Hield, did you get a lot of visits or phone calls from NBA coaches or scouts and saying, "Hey, Lon, you know, tell me about these guys"?
You do that, for sure. Yeah, they do an unbelievable amount of research, the NBA people do, through all the social media, through all the people at the university. It's not just the coaches, but the academic folks, it's the trainers, it's the administration. They do an unbelievable amount of research, and it's a big investment for them, so they want all the information they can get.
All right, before we let you go, Coach, let's talk about the Sooners coming up this season. What is the outlook for the 2018-19 season?
Like our group a lot. Like it a lot. Six seniors, so a lot of guys that were on this club are back. We've got a couple of fifth-year graduates because of Trey's departure. We went out and found a couple of really quality, talented fifth-year point guards, so that's a nice addition. So we'll be a mature group. We've got a group that's motivated to not only get back to the tournament, but advance to the tournament and have another good year.
All right, do we have another Trae Young? Are we going to be hearing about another one of these Buddy Hield, Trae Young type of guys? It seems like you're getting them.
Well, we love to have that type of talent, but not in this group. We've got a good group that'll have good balance and make plays for each other. And what I really like about them is they're really highly motivated to bounce back and have a better year yet.
I didn't know if you were perusing the Bahamas again, during the off season.
We wouldn't mind doing that. We wouldn't mind finding another buddy for sure.
All right, Lon. Hey, really appreciate the time. Thank you very much. Great talking with you. And, love your candor, your honesty. And as you know, you're very beloved still here in Las Vegas.
Appreciate it, TC. Thanks very much.
You got it. There he is, Lon Kruger, the head coach of the Oklahoma Sooners in his eighth year there. And, of course, UNLV head coach. People still love him. Just a great guy. It still means a lot to this community with his Coaches versus Cancer that he's still involved with here. 2008 Coach of the Year in the Mountain West Conference. Of course, spent the 2004 through 2011 seasons as head coach of the Running Rebels. When we come back, we will talk to Mark Anderson. We'll talk about Brandon McCoy, talk about former Rebels, that will he get drafted tonight. But we've got some tickets to give away for the Las Vegas Aces. We've got to give them away, Magnum, plain and simple. And we're going to do that for you.
You've got to give away earlier, so I'm not in the process of answering phones as we're exiting the show.
Yeah. So I was going to throw out a trivia question. Would you rather me throw out a trivia question?
No, because that would take a lot longer, and we would never get out of here before JT comes in.
Exactly. All right. So we're going to take the first three callers. The first three callers want to go see the Aces for Sunday's game. Sunday's game against the defending champion, the Minnesota Lynx. 876-1340, the phone number. 876-1340, the phone number. Call in. Be patient. Magnum will get to you during the break. We appreciate it. Your chance to win Aces tickets. Call now. Right here, T.C. Martin Show on Fox. Get on over to one of the fantastic CG Technology Sportsbooks. Get the CG Technology mobile app over at the Palms, the M Resort, the Silverton, Venetian Plaza, Hard Rock, Tropicana. The CG Technology mobile app, it's betting made easy. You can bet where you watch the games, bet from your phone. That's how convenient it is for you, the CG Technology mobile app. All right, NBA draft. First pick's going to happen within about a half hour or so. And joining us now, we appreciate Lon Kruger joining us, talking about Trae Young. Now we'll talk a little bit from the UNLV perspective with Mark Anderson. Does a fine job, of course, as we know, covering the Rebels on the football field as well as the basketball court. Mark, how you doing?
Doing well, TC. How you doing?
I'm good, buddy. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Brandon McCoy. And Mark, I know you and I have talked about this topic a lot during the course of last season. It just amazes me how people like to jump on the conversation starting in the exhibition season and proclaiming, hey, this guy's going to be a top 10 pick or he's going to be a first rounder. You know, you have to give all of these guys time, especially when they are coming into college, you know, freshman year. We've seen this so many times with all kinds of players, but specifically UNLV players, where these guys just aren't ready. Their draft stock continues to fall as the season progresses, and their future really isn't on solid ground. And unfortunately, I feel like Brandon McCoy is the latest in this same old story. And we've seen it with Steven Zimmerman and with other guys in the past, but it's always a very difficult subject to talk about. Because I know some of these guys, they get bad advice. They're not ready. They think they're ready. It's just a very tough situation. So I guess my question to you is, looking at Brandon McCoy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really argue with anything you just said. UNLV fans certainly have seen enough the past few years that to know that just because a guy's a five-star recruit doesn't mean he's, you know, a future NBA star. And Brandon McCoy may work out. Who knows? But you know, right now it looks like his game just isn't designed for the current NBA. I love the quote Jay Billis had in my story about he was born 10 years too late. If he'd come, you know, if he went to the NBA 10, 15 years ago, you know, I think he would have been easily a first round pick because he can do so much around the basket. But you know, it's look what happened to Dwight Howard. You know, he used to be a force in the league, and now, you know, he goes from team to team because even though he still puts up decent numbers, he doesn't take over games the way he used to because, you know, you can use big guys to draw him away from the basket now. And that's the problem with traditional centers is they get drawn away from the basket. And so it takes away, you know, their greatest strength of being able to dominate inside. So, if he can develop at least a mid-range game, that will help him tremendously. And I think he's going to have to go to the G League and do that. And maybe he will. Maybe he'll, you know, after a couple of years, he'll have enough of an outside game where he can be a good player in the NBA.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I read your article this morning. Another fantastic job there. And you got a chance to talk with Jay Billis. And Billis said, like you said, he was born 10 years too late because he's a back-to-the-basket, a pure post player. But you know what, Mark? So is DeAndre Ayton. So is Marvin Bagley. But you know what? These guys, in my opinion, are just much better than McCoy. If McCoy was as good and as polished and as developed as those guys, then I think he would be a first rounder. I mean, think about this. DeAndre Ayton, we're talking about being the number one overall pick in a league now that's not just a jump shooting league or three happy, but where the bigs are shooting that, but that's not DeAndre Ayton's game. But I just think he and Bagley are just so much better all around players than Brandon McCoy.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, I will say I'm, you know, I do wonder whether their games will translate to the NBA because of what we just talked about, both those players. But the one big knock on Brandon McCoy too, other than his shooting, is his defense, and that's something that he definitely has to improve, because one of the great fallacies about the NBA is people think they don't play defense in the NBA, which is so far from the truth. They play great defense in the NBA. It's just the offensive skill is so amazing that at times it looks like the defense isn't as good as it really is. You do have to play defense, and that's something that he's going to have to learn. And it looked like his technique and defense wasn't all that great, and so that to me is teachable. So, you know, whether he picks it up or not, I don't know, but he's going to have to figure out in the G League because I just don't see him going to the NBA right away and really getting the chance to play a lot, if at all.
Where do you think he gets drafted tonight, or does he get drafted?
Yeah, it's interesting. Most of the mocks I looked at didn't even have him getting drafted. So, I keep hearing, you know, I heard someone, I don't remember who it was, say in the 40s, I wouldn't be surprised. I think that's maybe he might sneak into the 30s, but I think it's probably more like if he goes, it'd be somewhere in the 40s. But I can easily see him not getting drafted as well, you know. So it just depends. It probably depends on a team and its need and where they think he can fit in.
Like so many of these other guys, they think that they're ready and they're not ready, and it's so competitive. But a guy like Brandon McCoy, and they don't like to hear this, but, you know, staying in school would actually, you know, benefit him. And I know some people will say, well, you know, he's a 7-footer. He can develop in the G League and get the coaching, you know, from the NBA coaches. What is your take on that? How do you feel about that? Or do you think staying at UNLV, playing for Marvin Menzies for at least one more season would be beneficial to him?
Yeah, I tend to think that guys who stay in college longer wind up benefiting more. But I will say that the NBA is really making a strong effort to improve the G League, where it's come a long way from where it used to be, and it is much more of a developmental league now. And so I think, I don't know there's a huge difference anymore in being in college and being in the G League. So I don't know that this can necessarily hurt him in that regard, but I have long thought he should have come back for another season. I think Steven Zimmerman should have too, and so should Rashad Vaughn. So, and Zimmerman and Vaughn now are struggling to stick anywhere. And, you know, check back another couple of years, that could be McCoy, but who knows? And maybe he'll get the coaching he needs and develop the way he needs to and find a way to go somewhere and stick.
Mark Anderson joins us from the Las Vegas Review-Journal covering UNLV basketball. Let's talk a little bit about the Rebel outlook for this coming season. Your thoughts?
Football or basketball?
Let's start basketball, since it's a basketball conversation today.
I think it's going to be top-heavy in the conference. I mean, clearly UNR is the team to beat. I think San Diego State be strong again. It'd be interesting to see New Mexico. Do they take a step back, or do they, you know, do they remain a contender? And then I think UNLV can be right there in the top three or four. So it will depend on their backcourt play, largely. You know, trying to replace two senior guards. Amari Hardy will get a lot more responsibilities. You know, the onus will be on Bryce Hamilton and Trey Woodbury to come in and be immediate impact players, and I think they can be. And if they are, if they can provide them the shooting that they need, then, you know, I think Shakur Justin will only get better. I like what Mbaki Jiang did last year, and I think he can continue to get better. So, they play a more challenging non-conference schedule, and I think they'll be able to prepare them for Mountain West play, and that was something that hurt them last season. So we'll see. Right now it's UNR and everyone else, and I don't think, you know, he's quite as up the level San Diego State, and I can see them maybe competing with New Mexico for that third spot.
All right, Mark. Great stuff. We'll keep following you on the RJ. Appreciate it. Follow him on Twitter as well, too. We appreciate it, my friend. We'll look forward to talking with you as we get closer to football season, too.
Sounds good, TC. Thanks for having me on.
There he is, Mark Anderson from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. You can follow him on Twitter, MarkAnderson65. All right, I want to thank Lon Kruger for joining us. Brian Salmon from the RJ. Appreciate him coming in today, and action-packed show. And of course, you can go to the website and check it out. It'll be up a little bit later on at tcmartinshow.com. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at tcmartin21. All right, tomorrow, Tracy Murray's going to join us as we recap what took place in the NBA draft, and we'll see if Brandon McCoy actually gets drafted or not. All right, for Chris Chapman, TC Martin saying so long. JT the Brick coming up next, so keep it right here Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Have yourself a good one. We'll catch you tomorrow right here at 3 o'clock.